This is Jerry Pippin. Welcome back to our 9/11 special. Paul Cross is our guest, and we'll get back to Paul here in a moment. Paul, when we went to the break, we were talking about the press just not buying any of these conspiracy theories about 9/11, even though you and I both feel the government has a conspiracy theory going all its own. For instance, an interesting thing happened with a reporter I really admire, Jim Lehrer of PBS, recently on an NPR show hosted by Diane Rehm, in which a caller asked about 9/11. Listen carefully to his response. Then I have a comment. Then let's get back to the interview.
All right, let's go to Barbara in Divine, Texas. You're on the air.
Wow, thank you very much for taking this particular call.
Certainly.
You're wonderful. He talks about fact-checking, how important that is. And the New York Times and sometimes the Wall Street Journal do give us facts that others don't. But it seems to me they spend an awful lot of time obliterating facts that are really important, that wars turn on. For instance, I unfortunately have to tell you I'm a 9/11 truther. Why did three buildings go down exactly as they were professionally demolished? One wasn't even hit, and nobody asked any serious questions. The explanations we were given just weren't sufficient. There were no photographs. No planes were called up to intercept for 1.5 hours. There is a website. It's 500 people who are military brass, government officials, engineers, airline pilots, survivors, and they're all seriously questioning the official story. I don't think they're all crazy.
All right, Barbara, thanks for calling. And Jim, I know many, many people feel, as Barbara does, that they never got the whole story of 9/11.
I'm sure there are. I don't happen to be one of them. But I would say to Barbara, I've been to Divine, Texas, so we do share that. The reporting that I have seen on that day and since as part of my professional life, I do not share the skepticism that I know that Barbara and others feel.
As you can see, Paul, Jim's just not buying it, and he's not the only reporter I've talked to. Many people in a position to know a lot better than I am get a lot more answers than I do. They just can't, you know, accept what we're talking about here. And there's no sense you answering that, because we did that in the first half hour when I read your email about how you felt about the American Airlines flight going into the Pentagon and the film clip that we have on our website. By the way, I wrote Jim Lehrer's publicist, and she got back to me rather promptly and said Jim would love to do an interview about why he believes that way, but he's busy on his book tour till June. So we'll give him a break. I offered to talk about the book. Anyway, Paul, speaking of writing, you star in this, you write in it, it's your project. Is that right?
I did. Okay. I wrote the film and starred in it and directed it.
So let's get back to your documentary here, your docudrama. I guess it's really a piece of fiction, as you said. When we talk about your characters and why you wrote it, tell me a little bit about... Flesh out the story for our audience.
He's damaged goods. What I wanted to write a character that was a reflection of the American people. And I know I made him very quirky. He was damaged from the Vietnam War because he despises killing and he doesn't understand the principle behind it. But yet he's extremely patriotic and supports his country and doesn't believe his country would ever do anything to harm its people. Well, the event happens on 9/11 at the Pentagon. He's there. He's a major in the Army, working for the Army. He's not on active duty. He's an accountant. He's a bookworm. And he works in the Pentagon. And he was standing by the window when the event happened, and a buddy of his was killed, and that triggered reaction about when he was in Vietnam. He had some buddies killed, and they believed in the war. They wanted to be there, and they wanted to fight, and they believed that it was the right thing to do, but they never came back. They got killed, but Stanley, my character, who didn't believe in the war but went to fight as a patriotic duty, he thought, came back alive, and he was the one who was against the whole thing. So he had a little guilt complex altogether about that. And then 9/11 happens, a buddy of his is killed in the blast, and he's not, and yet he was standing by the window, and he just can't figure out why he didn't see this big plane coming towards him. So he goes about his business. He writes his memos in a diary that he keeps with Thomas Jefferson, and he explains to Thomas Jefferson everything that's happened that day, but he just can't understand why he didn't see the plane coming. He goes back to his psychiatrist, which he had been to prior to this, on problems of his marriage falling apart because of his mental breakdown from the Vietnam days. So he tries to discover why he didn't see the plane. He wants to prove his own sanity to himself, that he's not going crazy again, because he saw no evidence of a 757 hitting that building. In the meantime, a British reporter gets a hold of him, and the British reporter has done his homework prior to contacting Major Stanley Kruder, my character, and he tries to get me to open up about what I saw, and I don't want to talk about it. And he says, well, you need to talk about it. He said, I've discovered all kinds of things that have happened that day. He says, please meet with me. So we finally meet in his hotel room late at 4 o'clock in the morning. And he explains to me everything he's found out. And I don't want to believe him. So we have an argument. And then I come around a little later realizing that everything he's been telling me when I research it is the truth, that the government has been lying to us. So that sets him on a path to, first he was out to prove his sanity to himself. Then he goes out to prove to himself that the government didn't lie about it, that this guy from, this reporter from Great Britain is a nutter. And then he finds out he's not a nutter. And then he decides, what do I do about the information that I have in my possession? And I won't tell any more because it'll give it away.
Well, Paul, we understand that part of it. Tell me, in the creative process when you were putting this thing together, the film, did you get a chance to talk to anybody about your theory, your hypothesis about there not being a plane, at least not a 757?
I didn't tell anybody.
Okay.
That is, I kept it a secret. I wouldn't give the script out to anybody. There's, I think, like 80 actors in the film, and no one was allowed to read the script. I didn't care how big their part was. I didn't allow them to read it. I gave them just what we call in the film business,
sure,
sides. It means you're part of the script, mm-hmm, your scenes. So I gave each character their scenes to obviously learn, and then they came to the set and they did their scenes, but it was a big puzzle to most of them. They had no idea what the film was about. I didn't want to tell anybody because I was afraid that it would get out, and I didn't want someone stopping me, frankly. I was paranoid.
Okay, so you were able to pretty well keep the content under wraps while you were filming it. But later on, you had to, as we say, shop the documentary, I imagine, to distributors and people like that, so the word got out. I guess what I'm really asking is, did you get any interference from the United States government?
I know, well, I do know that the film has been mentioned on the Pentagon's website and a few other military websites. I personally have seen it myself.
What do they say?
They just mentioned the fact I have never read anything where they have discredited the film or me.
Well, the reaction of the Pentagon itself to the film, I think, is very interesting. You know, a lot of people at the Pentagon have top-notch, top-gun military experience. I mean, they would, you would think, recognize a fraud right off the bat.
Oh, of course.
A strange fact, and I believe I'm correct on this, no one in the Air Force was killed in the attack on the Pentagon. just the other services, mainly the Army.
Well, there are, what's also really strange is the list of the people, and it's too foggy for me to really give you details about this. I would suggest anybody listening to look up the passengers on Flight 77. And I also always like to add in any interviews that I do that my heart goes out to any of the family members and friends of any of all the victims. And I don't mean to make light of their demise at all, not in the slightest. I spent many days after the event crying about it, thinking of all these people's lives who were lost.
One of the passengers was Barbara Olson, a strong Bush supporter.
I know. Yeah, that's a very strange story. I mean, everything she did that day, or that was reported that she did aboard the plane to her husband. The telephone calls.
We're talking about Ted Olson, the Solicitor General during the Bush administration.
I'm sorry. Yeah, right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the, so.
His story's changed a couple of times. At first he said it was a cell phone. Later he said she called through the Justice Department switchboard.
And if it was a cell phone, you know, there's, I've read where it was virtually impossible cell phone.
That's true. That's true.
And if she used the phone on the plane and she said she didn't have a credit card, the phones, I'm told, were only, you could only use them and activate them only if you used a credit card.
Well, I hadn't heard that about the credit card. I mean, she could have any credit card she wanted, I'm sure.
Well, according to her, she didn't have any. According to what he said, what I've read that he said,
mm-hmm.
That she was using a credit card, but yet she said she didn't have a credit card. So, I mean, it's all contradictory. Nothing makes any sense whatsoever.
Anyone else on that passenger list that caught your interest?
Yeah, very much so. The passenger list was very fascinating in regard to... I really shouldn't be spouting this off because I'm not sure, because I've forgotten most of it because there's so much to remember about this day. But the people on the plane were, there were military people aboard the plane, and they were like scientists or something. They weren't your average Joe, like my character who was working in the Pentagon. These were people that were extremely highly intelligent and in very sophisticated technological jobs. But it's definitely worth a perusal on the internet to see for yourself the passenger list, because it's kind of fascinating. There's, you know, Flight 93, which is another movie that should be made, because according to the eyewitnesses that were there after the event, when they went to this, what someone called just a big pit full of garbage, and I don't mean to hurt anyone's feelings whose family members think that their family members were in there, but they weren't, according to even the coroner who got to the site. And after a half an hour, he said, "Well, my job's done here." He said, "There isn't even any blood."
As you know, the show just before this one, we found a lot of information out about Flight 93. We had two people, enlisted people in the military, that say that Flight 93 was shot down. One was on the flight line, and the jets scrambled, and they had missiles, and four jets came back, only three missiles. And then we have the testimony of the PFC at Fort Meade, where she was pressed into duty to be a gopher, and these high-level officers were ordering 93 to be shot down because it wasn't answering his radio signal.
Flight 93, to me, is as fascinatingly of a mystery as Flight 77. And, of course, they immortalized the story with those two films that came out, which, you know, they were beautifully done, but they do not tell the truth.
Well, I can see those movies being made with the official U.S. government conspiracy line, and the movie producers not even be in on it. It's a good story. I don't think it's true. I think that plane was shot down.
Oh, obviously that plane did not crash there.
You know, the story about the box cutter knives, that really started with Barbara Olson.
Oh, did it?
I mean, that's what her husband said, that she told him that the hijackers had box cutter knives. Did you know that?
It, you know, the mystery is what happened to those planes. Now, I won't go into what I say in the movie what happens to those planes, because it's very involved, and when I was researching this film...
But you do have an answer in the...
I do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I knew as a filmmaker, as a screenwriter, I had to answer those questions. I didn't want the audience coming out saying, gee, they didn't cover this important thing here. You know, they left that out because they didn't have an answer to it. But yet I didn't want to give them the answers. My objective in this film, basically, Jerry, was to make them aware something is wrong and to go research, to go start asking questions. Because I don't tie this up in a nice ribbon at the end of the film and hand it to the audience and say, okay, here's what happened. You know, it's left up for speculation, and you have to come out of there thinking, because when I was writing the film and doing the research, so much, it was voluminous, the amount of information that I was finding that was literally fascinating. Fascinating. And I thought, you know, I couldn't invent this story. No writer could. It's impossible. It's bigger than life. It's just ridiculously involved and intricate. And I had stacks and stacks of research. And I looked at this and I said, how in the heck am I going to make a feature film out of that? Because I know that in a feature film, you cannot throw too much information at the audience. You will lose them. And I could not afford to lose them. The story was too important. I had to keep them with me at all times. So I had to leave out a lot of things that I wanted to put in because there simply wasn't enough room. Brevity is the most difficult thing about writing a screenplay anyway. So, but I did know that I had to somehow or other give an explanation of, okay, if Flight 77 didn't hit the Pentagon, where is it? If Flight 93 didn't crash in Shanksville, where is it? I had to touch on it, you know. So I did, and I sort of get around it in a roundabout way with the character of Andrew Porter, who is a reporter. He says, I'm not sure about this, and then he goes into the explanation, and when he explains everything to me, it comes to life, you know, so the audience doesn't sit and watch this man just talking to me. We see the event reenacted on film. So we reenact whatever he's talking about what happened to these, his theory about what happened
theory
to
theory in your movie about what happened to those planes. I have my own theory. Do you feel comfortable with your theory?
I feel comfortable with it as one scenario that's feasible.
It's a possible,
but
possibility.
There are other ones as well. I would simply love to know where those planes are and where are those people.
Well, there have been reports on the Internet that a couple of those planes are still flying.
Exactly. Exactly. I know. I've read that, too. That's another one of their blatant things that they just throw at you. I mean, the call number of the planes are the same as the ones that were supposed to have been crashed.
I'm pretty certain that they're all dead, and I think all of the passengers, you know, it was very light, all of the passenger loads that day, which right there is something unusual.
That's right. That's right, because if I'm not mistaken, and I don't think I am, those planes were all very empty that day. And
yes, they were.
The amount of passengers on all four planes would have fit onto one plane.
Right.
I think it landed in Ohio or Pennsylvania someplace. It loaded everybody up. And I have a theory about it. As you know, I've talked about it on this radio show, and they fly over a controlled airspace and get shot down by other people who are just doing their duty.
Yeah, because there's been too many reports about those planes, one of the planes landing in Dayton, Ohio, I believe it was, and the passengers got off and were put onto another plane. The thing is, there are people all over this country that have very pertinent information about what they saw that day. I'm sure there are people in, say that one of the planes did land in Dayton, Ohio.
Right, or Reading, Pennsylvania, or wherever.
And then they put those people onto, say all four planes landed at some airport, and they were all put onto one plane. It was very simple to tell them they had mechanical difficulty.
Sure.
And that they needed to change planes. Who's going to question it? Nobody. Nobody's going to say, you know, I think it's the real McCoy. So there are people probably who saw all this happening who after, oh, wait a minute, I remember this, that, and the other thing. That's, you know, put all those pieces together and you've got the answer to this huge mystery. But those people have probably come forth, but no one's listening to them. And no one has contacted me. That's what kind of surprises me.
On every one of these 9/11 shows, I always give my phone number and my email address and urge someone to contact me if they have any inkling that their information might be valuable. So I'm going to do it okay now, Paul, if it's okay with you. 918-682-2630. That's my number. 918-682-2630. Or jerry@jerrypippin.com by email. Now back to the movie. This is a tough road to hoe with a DVD, but you're doing a good job. We're doing everything we can to get the word out. I'd love to see that thing in big distribution.
It's a tough road. I'm doing pretty well with it because of people like yourself who are intelligent patriots of this beautiful country and don't want to see it happen again. I mean, I think the non-patriots are the people who put their head in the sand. That's what I think. Anybody who really loves this country and wants to see it be as brilliant as it is and can be and don't want to see anything happen to it. So it's people like yourself who are helping me, and it's
extremely
appreciated.
We talked about the media's reluctance to address this issue. Another thing that really puzzles me is the politicians. None of the political people want to get involved, evidently. They just don't want to talk
about this.
They don't. They don't want to talk about it because, and I'll give you a small little story. My girlfriend and I were at a screening that Oliver Stone was at. And my girlfriend went up to Oliver Stone. And I was right behind her. I did not talk to him, but she did. She said, Mr. Stone, she said, we have a feature film on 9/11, what really happened. And he said, get away. He said, no more conspiracy stuff for me. And I was shocked to hear him say it because I thought he would be someone who would be dedicated to telling the truth. And then I saw his World Trade Center film. And man, did he sell out. And I love this guy. I think he's a brilliant, brilliant director.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what happened there.
I'm not either. I don't quite get it. I think maybe he took too much heat for JFK, which was a masterpiece in my opinion. And I think he took so much heat for that that it probably harmed him mentally and career-wise maybe even. I don't know.
Well, Paul, nobody's trying to educate me. And maybe not you. I guess maybe they don't figure we're big enough fish. You know, you got a DVD out there. It's not in, national syndication or anything. I'm on the internet. Who knows?
Yeah, I suppose that's their logic with me, is that the guy's not big enough to educate. But the guy might not be as big as Oliver Stone, but he definitely has a very big message.
Yes, you
and
do.
It is out there. I mean, it wasn't easy. I'll tell you, it wasn't easy. And it was made with all the intentions of getting it out there so it wouldn't happen again.
You put a lot of energy into this one,
Paul. What I fear the most is it happening again.
Well, it could happen again. They're brazen enough to try it again. In fact, that may be their undoing. I think it would be. I think most people have wisened up. Just not a lot about the 9/11 story that is logical.
That's right.
Doesn't play out very well, as you know.
That's right. Exactly why they did it.
Some of this, if it were a fiction piece and we had handed it out, and I guess it is a fiction piece in a way, but and nobody would publish it or make a movie out of it because it's not logical. Too many loose ends. Just follow the money.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see why they did it. A lot of people got rich. And they didn't have to know about the original project exactly, but you get a lot of allies if all of a sudden what you're doing is making them a lot of money. We've seen that on the stock market. Well, the war made a lot of money for people. Big budgets, privatization of everything, independent contractors getting lots of money. It's a mess. You know, we talk about the defense budget and the war, but just the airport security alone. Look at that.
I know. It is so ridiculous what they put you through.
It's
making
ridiculous.
You take off your shoes.
Lots of money going for nothing.
Yes, it does. And they treat you like garbage, by the way, these airports.
Yes, they do.
They're not polite. They act like you are a definite threat to society. I mean, just not me, but everybody. They treat everyone very rudely. And I don't know who gives them the right to do this. And they're not keeping anybody any safer whatsoever.
I don't think so.
Because they just simply, I mean, I've seen reports on some of these talk shows like 60 Minutes and these other journal shows where they've done experiments where they've actually gotten things through the magnetometers and through the checkpoints. So these people are not doing a very good job even if they were trying to save the world with what they do. They're really inefficient. And I have flown all over the world. And I'm telling you, it's just an absolute...
How is it in other countries?
It's pretty bad. I can't say it's as bad as it is here. Excuse me. But it is bad. But there are, like, for example, I was in Naples, going to a film festival, passing through Naples, and they don't make you take off your shoes there. You have this thing you stand on with your shoes on, and it determines whether or not there's anything in your shoes that shouldn't be, but you don't have to take them off and put them in a little tray and have them pass through while you're walking around. Right after 9/11, I had to make a trip to France for the other documentary that I had made on the musical theater. So I had to actually leave Washington in the middle of my post-production around October and fly back to Los Angeles, get my passport, then fly from here to France. And it was about a month after 9/11. And they were harassing groups of old people who were on tours, going on a cruise or something. I mean, people my mom's age, putting them through all this and who... Not only was it ridiculous, but they were Caucasian. They didn't fit a profile of a terrorist. And I thought to myself, where is the logic in this? What are these people doing? And I heard Barbara Walters say on TV that they treat her as badly as they do everybody else.
I think that's part of the game they're playing. The better you're known, the worse they treat you.
Well, I'll tell you this. Every since I've made this film, I have flown a lot, and every time I come back from someplace out of the country, they pull me aside. It never fails. Anybody else in my party, they don't bother with. Me, they always bother me, bring me over to a secure area, and privately inquire where I was, what I was doing, go through all my belongings. Every single time. I think I'm on the list of some. It's really annoying because I expect it now. It's like when they say, come over here, I'm ready to go because I know they're going to do it.
Well, Cross, our time is getting away from us. Let's tell people how they can get a hold of the movie, Severe Visibility.
Sure. sure, they can go to www.severevisibility.com, and there's a link on there that'll take you to CreateSpace, and they can also buy it on Amazon.com as well. So between those three, severevisibility.com takes you directly to CreateSpace, so they buy it through CreateSpace. And their service is great. They'll get it within a couple of days. And the same thing with Amazon.com. So it's easy to get.
You've done the research. You did the film. You wrote it. You were even there at the Pentagon the day it happened. Looking back over it now, after all these years, what do you figure it was about? What was it all about, Alfie? You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. I think it was just a pretext to... I think it's a couple of things. I think it was very, very convenient to then start a war in Afghanistan and Iraq, which they did, and using that as the excuse, which was ridiculous. So we all found out, the world found out later it was a big lie. So if they thought, so now they know that they lie, which is good, because if they say, well, they lied about going into war and the pretext for a war, then maybe the pretext was a lie, too, a big staged act. I think that was one reason, and coupled with that reason, I also believe it was a way to introduce the Patriot Act, which helps the New World Order create their agenda in basically changing the world to a one-world government. Like with the Euro and what's going to happen with the Amero and et cetera, et cetera.
Well, they've done a pretty good job on the money, that's for sure.
They're absolutely correct. So I think that they had a two-prong motive for doing it, and I think the one was immediate, which was the wars, and the other one is a little bit more in coming, and I think another 9/11 will cinch it for them, and I think they'll be able to put the icing on their cake then.
Paul, thanks for being on. Paul Cross, director, writer, producer, Severe Visibility, that's the name of the movie. Pick it up. We have a link here where you can order the DVD.
Well, that would be nice.
Thanks, Paul, for being on a 9/11 show.
Good. Well,
and helping
so
us put the spotlight on the Pentagon. We'll be doing many more shows. Hopefully somebody will come forward. Thanks, Paul. Thank you for listening. I'm Jerry Pittman.